Welcome to the Blockchain Life with your host, Wall Street Journal and USA Today's best-selling author, Kerry Oberbrunner. In each episode, we explore relevant topics that help you keep your world connected and protected. Thanks for joining the conversation today. Let's begin.
Hey folks, it's Kerry Oberbrunner, and listen, I almost couldn't sleep last night. In fact, the guests could probably verify that, because I checked my phone in the middle of the night with a message from him. This is an exciting interview. In fact, I'm just going to jump right into it. Pete, tell us as much or as little about yourself as you want, and then we are going to dive into how blockchain is literally changing the world. You are a man with a lot of experience, so this is not theory. Let's jump in.
Sure. Thanks for hosting me, Kerry. I really appreciate it. I've really looked forward to this very much, and I know we've been trying to set this up for a bit. So a little bit, you know, I'm a technology entrepreneur. I had a previous career before that, but, you know, for the last 20 years, I've been involved with technology, information technology specifically. And sort of how did I come about the blockchain was like anything else. You know, it's dumb luck. It's standing, you know, with a group of three people, you know, next to the buffet kind of a thing. And somebody right. says something, have you heard of this? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about kind of thing. I was in Argentina in, I don't know, late 2010, maybe early 2011.
Oh my gosh.
I know. And we were down there on a family trip, and there was actually a social event that we were attending. Okay. And there were quite a few expats. So it was a fairly international gathering. Okay. But there were quite a few American expats, and they're just chatting about different things, about where the world was going. Mm-hmm. You know, we were just coming out of the 2008 Great Recession. Yes. Right, where the banking system was really brought really to the brink. And so there was a lot of conversation around that. And somebody said, have you heard of Bitcoin? And so if this is, you know, late 2010, you got to realize this is a pretty early. Very, very early. I'm like, no, tell me about it. So he said, oh, this thing is great. It's amazing. It's, you know, because I'd heard of, you know, e-gold and digital dollars and stuff like sure. that. And things that were sort of the predecessors, the technology predecessors, the philosophical predecessors mm-hmm. to it. I sort of, you know, stayed on top of that. But for some reason, Bitcoin had sort of escaped me. I was pretty busy with some other things at the time.
Sure.
Well, I went back and I took a look at it. I'm like, going, this is amazing. So I downloaded the Bitcoin wallet. There was one wallet to get, and that was the Bitcoin wallet. And you got a Bitcoin when you downloaded the wallet.
Are you serious? Bitcoin.
Yeah. So think about it. I mean, if you could do that all over again, would you go out and buy 50 laptops and just download the Bitcoin wallet? I mean, think about that. Crazy, huh? Yeah, you get a full Bitcoin wallet. There's like, yeah, I have a Bitcoin. So it's like the original airdrop, right?
Wow.
And So I returned to the U.S. and started mining Bitcoin on my little Toshiba laptop in my office.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, so it sat there and did its thing. And and I think I lost the first like 25 or something like that. I don't know.
Which today, again, some of my audience doesn't know. But Bitcoin today is around $46,000. Yeah, it goes up and down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I call it like, I think it was like 49 today. Maybe it was up by 3K. But, you know, just think about that. So let's just say 45 to 50K. So 25, I mean, that's, you know, over $1 million. And so pretty crazy. But I was bit by this thing for a variety of reasons. One, philosophical. I like the idea of sort of an element of distributed auditing. Like that. You know, I think all of us about that time had a healthy skepticism about the way the banking system worked. We felt that, you know, there were some winners and losers that were sort of selected, you know, in the back room.
Yes, totally.
And so it was a little bit of a concern. But It was fun. It was new. I don't think anybody really believed that it would be where it was today. I mean, if anybody had had any inkling of it, I mean, they would have, you know, sold the house and sold the car kind of a thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I sat there and, you know, got involved, but, you know, really it was a very, very esoteric thing. You know, it was frankly limited to both. It was really sort of a cyberpunk type of a thing. And it was also very popular with sort of the radical libertarian movement. You know, that really wanted to get away from central banking, right? So those were sort of the two places where it was really taking off.
So you were a fringe person. You were a freak. If the world kind of thought of people as fringe, freak, weird. Okay, keep going. Love it.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, and there was the usual, you know, why does the internet exist? Oh, it's for, you know, to deal in, you know, dark web things, right? So that's the same thing that they said about cryptocurrencies. Oh, it's so that criminals can pay each other, you know. Okay, well, you know, that's what you want to believe. That's what you want to believe. But let's be honest, if you sort of look under the hood of the technology, it's amazing. And so I started speaking to different organizations. I spoke to larger U.S. banks. I spoke to the Banking Association in Chicago. I spoke to the U.S. Secret Service. I spoke to the FBI. I was invited to speak about it in Singapore. I spoke to several state governor cyber conferences about it. And I said, guys, this is coming, you know. And at this time, you know, I think when I spoke about it the first time, it was like $5. And they're like, eh, whatever. And it's interesting, you know, how many people come up and said, I wish. And I think they're missing the broader point. Yes. Because when they think of, you know, cryptocurrencies, they think of, oh, I just missed this Bitcoin run up. Yeah, you did. But you know what? We don't even have three outs in the top of the first inning yet. You know?
Wow. Steve, that's so important. I love that.
You know, and so I really, really started digging into what blockchain and distributed ledger could do for non-financial stuff. So I got very interested in provenance and an element of distributed assurance, both from a technology perspective and from a logistics perspective. I spoke at a conference and I offered up, and this would have been probably 2013, maybe 2014.
Is this the conference where you were with the Ethereum founder?
I think that was actually another one. Gotcha. But the very first one I spoke at was in 2013. Okay. And that was, I presented the idea of using BGP, which is a routing protocol that the internet uses, and it gets attacked a lot. I said BGP could be protected with blockchain. I presented the idea that the blockchain could be used to protect identity. And subsequent, we've seen a lot of identity platforms take advantage of the blockchain or use the blockchain as the underlying platform. Logging of critical events, things like that. I said, guys, the blockchain is far more than just money. It's the ability for everybody to be able to trust something, and they can look at logs, they can look at events, they can look at transactions with a degree of trust. And so that's where I really, really started digging into it in terms of what it could do. And I think one of the things that I've come to believe over time is that, you know, they're not mutually exclusive, because there's value to be that's associated with these transactions. There's value associated with surety, and there's value that can be transferred to people who contribute to that. Mm. And so the blockchain allows for everybody to participate in creating more resilient systems and being compensated for that. Mm. So it rewards good behavior, and it rewards communal participation where communal participation is meaningful. You know, Eleanor Ostrom talked about sort of this whole idea of the commons, and how it's the commons is an area that sort of is not in the public sector. It's not in the private sector. It's sort of the shared area that where tremendous amount of value gets exchanged. that is that, but it doesn't show up on a ledger. A perfect example of that is open source software.
Yeah.
And so now there's a mechanism in which there's the ability to sort of transfer value in that space without it being sort of tied down to control, where everybody have, can have control and everybody can be compensated for that.
See, so that's interesting because you jumped currency, and I'm glad you did. Currency, I've never been in the financial world. It doesn't really excite me, but I definitely see blockchain and how it helps the unbanked, the 6 billion.
It helps create
value. It fights inflation. It takes down the fiat system. So I love all that, but you touched on something that no other guest touched on yet so far. And that is this philosophy. You talked a little bit about libertarianism, but I really think you're onto something, because I think that there is a skepticism and a cynicism about our world today that blockchain is solving. And to me, that's more valuable than Bitcoin. What do you think?
I completely agree. You know, the idea that, first of all, it makes every aspect of your life portable. And so, you know, one of the things that sort of that HIPAA does is, like, for as an example, right, is the idea that you have portable insurance. But imagine if every aspect of your life was portable, right? So, like, identity, hard as it is to believe, identity today is not portable. Your identity and the ability to attest to your identity depends on your sovereign political entity granting you that in the form of a passport or a driver's license. In other words, if a person's passport gets revoked, they cannot travel.
Wow.
Right? If a person's driver's license gets revoked, they cannot operate a motor vehicle. And while that may be slightly different than, say, a passport, imagine if you now have the ability on your phone or in your other thing that you bring your identity, and your identity has now been validated by a distributed organization. Nobody says anymore, and everybody says, we will trust that. It's gone, right? So, you know, now all of so there's all these things, and, you know, so as people open up their ideas and open up their mind to what the capabilities are of the blockchain, of distributed trust, and really what's commonly known as trustless systems, right? You know, a trustless system doesn't mean it's non-trusted. A trustless system means that you don't have to trust in a certain entity, in the integrity of a certain entity. You just have to trust that the algorithm is good. And, and that puts, so you no longer have to trust in the Arthur Andersons of the world.
You and I were invited, you and I were invited to speak to Strategic Coach this July on blockchain and smart contracts and non-fungible tokens.
Right.
You and I, we were able to have a lot of private conversations to prep for that, which was fantastic. But you even mentioned some person you know got married on the blockchain.
Right. So, she is an acquaintance of mine, and she, I will say her first name, but I will grant her the privacy. So Suzanne got married on the blockchain. And in fact, she was really instrumental in developing sort of this first sovereign nation on the blockchain. And it was called Pangea. And she was really, really an early visionary of it. She saw the big picture, and she was an evangelist of it, and was able to develop a significant technology following behind it. And she has lived a pretty interesting life, for sure. But yeah, she got married on the blockchain, and I think she may have been the first one ever.
Wow.
I remember when she announced it on social media.
That's crazy.
Kind of cool.
That is,
you know, and if you think about it, it's perfect for it, right? Because not only that, imagine this. You can now on the blockchain, you can, you know, it's, you know, one of the things, let's take something like a real estate contract.
Okay.
Real estate contracts in the United States are, you can throw every, take everything in, you can bring everything in or take anything out of a real estate contract. It's everything but the kitchen sink. And it's like going, yeah, you know, you take the fridge out before you leave. I want to, you know, all your clothes that are in this thing stays, right? So, I mean, you can do anything you want on these real estate contracts. It's pretty fascinating. Well, if you think about what a blockchain smart contract does, is it would allow you to do the same thing. So if you're getting married, you can say, well, here's what the marriage really means. The marriage means that what I brought, the following assets, move with me, and I maintain ownership of them. You maintain ownership. We agree to merge this. This is how we'll split it up. So if a prenup is necessary, you can just write that prenup right in there for whatever reason and allow for the, you know, anything to be sort of settled on the blockchain. And so, you know, there's so many things that it avoids if you develop these things up front. And everybody says, there it is. And not only that, you know, these things can be trigger enforced. So if there are certain external events that say, okay, this happened, this happened, this happened, boom, you know, if this, then that. You don't actually have to have a, you know, there's automated triggers for that.
That's so cool.
So it is amazing what's going to happen with the blockchain. And so much research is going into the back end, which I completely agree. Right. So we live, you know, we're early in a, there's several chains, as we know, that are focusing heavily on smart contracts. The two big ones, and I'm not promoting them over anybody else, but they are pretty popular right now, is Solana and Cardano. Right. So that's not meant to be an endorsement of them, but they're fairly popular and they catch quite a bit of news. You know, they're spending a significant amount of effort and development time in the back end. And that makes sense because if you think about contracts, these things can live for a long time. And so you want to get it right so that whatever changes you make doesn't have to go back and unravel work that you've done before. So the effort is really, really being put in to developing this back end, this foundation, and that, you know, stuff that really those of us that may not be working in the, you know, sort of the core see. Sure. But once the applications and the end users, you know, so there's going to be the second tier people that are going to develop end user applications. If that underlying layer of where the contracts are stored and executed, if that's solid and it's extensible in a trusted way, once these applications up here get developed that actually have meaningful business use, whether it's, captive insurance, or yeah, things of that nature. Once all of these applications come to bear, that's when this thing is going to become a rocket ship, because that's when people are going to see it. Because today people don't see it. They're thinking these things are just trading sardines that are going back and forth, right? So they're saying, well, the only reason why I'm buying this smart contract token is just so in a hope that the price is going to go up. And I get that today, because there's not a lot of application. You know, there's some weird gambling applications and there's some weird stuff, but the stuff that really people need, those things are still being developed. But
why you said we're in the first inning, because I'm going to throw some topics at you, Pete. And what I want you to do is respond how blockchain might be involved. Okay. Sure. So, cause a lot of people, a lot of our audience probably has gone to a sports game or a concert. Talk about how even sporting events, concerts, tickets will have blockchain technology.
Well, certainly you're going to be able to pay for it with crypto, right? So that's going to be a big thing. The other one is going to be the ability to not forge tickets, right? Mm. So the ability to trade tickets, and, you know, the ability to reissue a lost ticket, right? That's that, you know, there's going to be so many places where that's, you know, a concert, you know, the ability for the artist to at the concert say, okay, first, 100, you're going to get this NFT of our music, right? There's all sorts of things that are going to be enabled by this capability. And, wow. Right now, here's the thing that's interesting. Today, we are limited by our own experiences and our own reality. In other words, where we are today is we are looking to do a forklift parallel upgrade. How would today look like this on the blockchain? And it's because we haven't, what has to happen is there has to be a transition in which there's essentially a one-for-one exchange in terms of capability, but you have to move over here to be able to see all the capability as it goes up.
Jeez.
Right. So where we are today, and so this is, this is the place where the skeptics and the cynics love to work. They're like, well, if I can already do it like this today, why should I do all the work to make it the exact same? And they're like, because they don't see around the corner.
Yes.
Right. And that's what the cynics say. I won't name the person, but he's been widely mocked for saying that, that when all is said and done, the value of the internet will never be more than that of the fax machine, because people are going to run out of things to say to each other. Mm. And he was pretty widely mocked for it. And he's a fairly influential and well-recognized economist. This is probably one of those comments that I'm sure he would like to take back.
Yes.
We've all said things that we probably were too proud of. That I'm going to throw up there was probably one of his bigger ones.
Well, have you heard of Andreas and Anantopoulos?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So I've studied him a little bit, but he uses the analogy of the buggy, the carriage.
Yeah.
And he says in the beginning, when the roads are full of manure and the roads have all kinds of ruts in them, horse and buggy make sense. And the person who drives the automobile on the road with ruts and manure looks like a fool, because they're knee deep in manure and they're trying to fix a tire, but nobody carries the tire because the automobile's new. And where do you even get gas for the thing? And right. People mock it, but then slowly over time, they go in.
There's
parallel.
A shift.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. At first it's parallel, but then when we build the road, we kind of look at the horse like, well, what are you doing? And then, like you just said, new technologies are invented, like the skateboard, the scooter, the motorcycle. Everyone's mind says, now that we have a flat road,
there's all these capabilities.
Oh.
There's all this, the platform is there, right? It's a great example. Early on when automobiles won the car, they were required to have a person walking in front of it with a flag.
I heard that, and like saying, watch out for the death machine, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. So people are going, why would I want a car if that's going to happen? But there are people that can say, well, one day that's just not going to be the case.
Wow.
So
this is probably the best thing yet you've said, is that today we're looking at one for one exchanges. And a lot of doubters are saying, yeah, but we already have this and it's going to be a lot of work to get that on the blockchain. You're saying once we wade in and make the shift, now we can see a whole new world.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Right. Because once the platform and the tool sets exist and the mindset, because that's the biggest one. Right. Once the mindset that has tools available to it can start developing these things, that when this thing comes uncorked, Katie bar the door, it's going to be just a stampede of innovation and disruption. I will tell you I would tell you that the big ones, the ones that are just going to get absolutely blown out, right? It's going to be the insurance industry.
Why is that?
Yeah. Well, because what is an insurance policy? It's a contract.
All right.
And I mean, let's be honest, that's what an insurance policy is. If this happens, I will do this. In the meanwhile, I will do this. I will pay these premiums, boom, 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 boom. The following events occur that triggers this for this kind of a payment, wow. Right? I mean, it's basically, you know, if you think about it, is the blockchain is fundamentally a contract converted into software.
Yeah.
But with the key part of being of distributed auditing and enforcement. So it gets automatically triggered. So the idea then becomes over time, you're like going, you know what? I don't need an insurance adjuster. There is an automatic mechanism in which it triggers, right? So imagine in 15, 20 years, let's just say that we haven't gotten to the part where we're self-driving cars, or maybe we do, but they're only, you know, 99.9% perfect. They bump into each other once in a while. Well, whichever vehicle caused the problem, they automatically talk to each other and they're like, going, yeah, that was my fault. Sorry, boom, automatically triggers the contract.
Wow.
Done. Right. So nobody comes out, no police reports, no insurance adjuster, no figuring out what it is. It automatically goes through, automatically generates quotes. The value that the damage of that's associated with has already been done. Bring all that happens is they both go to their garages and it gets fixed and payments automatically take in place. Jeez. Right. So these are things, right? So think about that, you know, the way the blockchain can work. Let's take something like autonomous cars. Right. So everybody talks, you know, about autonomous cars. And I'll tell you one thing right now. Right? So I'm in the transportation industry and I got to be careful what I say because, sure. You know, I might anger some of my customers with what I'm going to say. But in the United States, the investment was made 75 years ago that our mode of transportation was going to be automobiles. And so we've put in what is frankly a pretty amazing highway system. So the idea of moving towards nationwide high-speed rail, I just don't think we're gonna get there. I just don't think it makes sense. And I don't think we have the population density across the whole country that can even justify that type of infrastructure. But we have already laid out the roads that allow for that. And so imagine an autonomous vehicle where they all have, you know, there may be sensors along the road that sort of serve as sort of like that provide some triangulation, but largely the vehicle is the autonomous and authoritative component of operating. So it maintains self-awareness. It's not being told, you know, by transponders or anything like that. But now, what we may want to do is now, because we've moved to autonomous vehicles, it's far more than just taking the driver out. It's about building efficiency and all that other stuff. So now what we may do is on top of it being an autonomous vehicle, now they become interconnected vehicles. So now if there's 20 vehicles that are going to the same location, imagine if they all talk to each other, they lock into like almost like a bicycle peloton, right? A group of cars.
And now they
can drive, you know, 18 inches apart. 75 miles an hour in a lane dedicated to that. And since everybody knows when everybody else is going to go off, there's not going to be anybody cutting off. You're like, and the thing that's really nice about that technology is that it can be done incrementally, right? So you can have it. You don't have to be all or nothing. You can say, okay, we'll start with it just on the highways. And then as soon as you're going to pull off, as soon as you pull off, now you take control of your vehicle again. And it slowly works its way out.
Wow.
The reason why the blockchain fits in is that it can continuously in real time maintain a fully audited state within an environment. And it can do things like where it summarizes things that are further away that are not as important, but there's still an element maybe that pops above a certain level of situational awareness that needs to be maintained. So these are some of the technologies that AI and blockchain are going to enable.
I was going to say AI, blockchain, augmented reality, metaverse, NFTs. I mean, it's literally not going to be the same world.
It is not going to be the same world. You know, I own a right. So I still have a gas powered vehicle that I drive. It is the last gas powered vehicle I'm going to buy.
Wow.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. Because I want to start familiarizing myself with the capabilities that are coming in to the sort of the new vehicles, because that's where all the investment is going.
Yeah.
There is no, you know,
can't go backwards.
Gas powered vehicles are legacy technology. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's going to take a long time. There's a huge industry, right? Gas stations and everything else like that. But, you know, I'll be honest with you. One of the things that I think needs to be developed there is, and I know we're moving off the blockchain, but
that's all good,
you know, man. We need to start looking at, you know, if I was a gas station, I'd be like, okay, well, how am I going to participate with this electric vehicle mechanism? How am I going to do that? You know, there were some technologies with battery replacement that doesn't seem to have gotten the traction that we were expecting. But there's going to be some mechanisms in which, you know, fast charging and things like that, because it's coming.
Yeah.
You know?
So even a gas station that would build a computer bar, so while you're charging your vehicle, they're getting out in front of it. This is where I'd like to spend our remaining time, Pete, is to say, okay, I'm in publishing, and some of my audience, because I haven't even announced this podcast yet, well, I'm days away, but I already have some people I know for a fact that are like, what is this guy thinking? What is he thinking? Did he go off the bandwagon? But here's A, I don't care anymore. B, talk about how someone who says, Cary, I'm in XYZ industry. Blockchain is so up here. I get what you and Pete are saying. How do I practically start wading in? What would you tell them?
How do I bring it down to my level? This is what I would tell every single entrepreneur or executive or manager or small business owner, anybody that has some, authority or say with regards to anything that has to do with contract, customer engagement, or anything like that. I would say, let's take a look at the workflow of what our business is, right? Because, you know, if you take a look at EOS, right? So yeah, exactly. So, you know, Gino's amazing work there. It basically says, look, all businesses are basically the same, right? There may be some different stories there, but they're fundamentally the same, right? You have a sales arm, yeah, right? You have a delivery arm, and then you have a finance arm, right? Yeah. So you have the people that generate the business, the people that execute and deliver the business, and then you have people that make sure that the business stays a business. And that's it. And then, you know, there's of course other stuff, but those are really the three fundamentals, right? So sales, operations, and finance. And whether you're a sole proprietor or whether you're a global enterprise,
yes,
you live according to those three core functions.
Yes.
And you take a look at what you're doing that has anything to do with contract. So anything that has to do with vendors, anything that has to do with customers, anything that has to do with partners, anything like that, and start saying, maybe there is a place where the blockchain has a fit. I had a conversation with one of my dearest friends. He is the treasurer for a public company that is a chemical company.
Okay.
And they provide certain products for a very, very well-known entrepreneur who's very, very, very pro blockchain.
Okay.
And I met with him, this is probably early summer, and I said, guys, you know, they were like, how can we get involved with blockchain? And I said, well, you guys are in a unique position where one of your customers is very, very, very pro blockchain. I might reach out to that person's team and say, hey, do you guys want to start playing with us? It doesn't mean that you have to start actually accepting payment or, you know, setting contract on it, but start getting smart on it and let it work in parallel. And yeah. Right. And that's like what Andreas said, right? And that is you start working in parallel and eventually the old system sort of falls off and then the next piece takes yeah. off, which is everything, right? That's the way it works. There's never a 90 degree cut from one capability to yeah. another one. There's just a natural way in which the older way just loses traction, loses yeah. steam. It's inefficient and it's allowed to die.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
It's almost like in cars for one period you had your tape deck and your CD.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And yeah. all of a sudden the tape deck fades. And yeah. then the CD fades. And yeah. then you're plugging in with your phone. You know, yeah. to go back to your point, grocery store. Who would have thought 20 years ago you'd walk into a grocery store and check out yourself? You know what right. I'm saying? But now you don't even have to go. Now you
can have a
computer yeah. and somebody right. shops for you, right?
I mean, you know, there are places that are more advanced than the United States when it comes to this, where you can literally do the following.
Okay.
You can go into a store. You can scan all the barcodes. You can go around the store, scan the barcode, all the things. You put it in the bag. And then as you go right up to the, get ready to leave, you press pay on your phone and you walk right out.
That's awesome. That's crazy.
Literally the attendant at the cash register is there in case somebody doesn't know how to do this.
Wow.
And maybe to make sure that there's no shoplifting.
Yeah.
It's yeah. So, you know, they call it mobile pay. You yeah. literally boop. So you have your own scanner on your phone, right? And then you pay, right? So there are places now where, you know, people just don't use cash.
Yeah.
Right. And there are some people that scares people, but if it's blockchain and if you are portable and just like you know, you carry your own identity, you carry your own money and you can't be shut off
yeah.
because it's not centralized, it's decentralized, then it's not a big deal.
This is probably the fourth time you and I've chatted one-on-one. You know, we've chatted many other times inside Strategic Coach. Pete, every time is mind-blowing. I know you are a student of this.
Same for me.
I love it. You know, someday we'll get into intellectual property and how blockchain, because that you know, that's my passion. But we'll bring you back.
Can we hit that a little bit right now? Or do we have time to talk?
Let's hit it,
man. You know, and I'll tell you why. You know, because Dan brings it up, and you know, Dan is one of the smartest people I know. His ability to simplify something is amazing. So the thing that I always pitch on intellectual property is that, you know, intellectual property on the blockchain is not a shield against predators. It represents a backing among people who support you.
Interesting.
And that is people who agree, right? So the idea of you putting your intellectual property on the blockchain, you know, if a community or society does not respect intellectual property, no blockchain lawyer or patent court is going to be able to protect that. Wow. They're just not, yeah. right? You think about it, right? They're not going to be able to do it because, I mean, you take a look at, you know, let's take a product like Louis Vuitton, okay. right? So, you know, Louis Vuitton bags are expensive. Right, relatively speaking, but I think they're expensive. Yeah. They're certainly more expensive than if just buying a regular bag.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you'll pay starting what $1,500 for a bag and you know, to the moon from there. And here's the deal, right? It doesn't cost $1,500 to make that bag. The money is all in the brand.
Yep.
It's all the managed scarcity of that brand. And so as a result, Louis Vuitton has to protect that brand viciously. It's critical for them. Their entire survival depends on it, right? And so there are bazaars outside of the United States and outside of Western Europe where you can buy a Louis Vuitton lookalike that absolutely is, you cannot tell the difference from that, and it'll cost you $5, right? And so putting that on the blockchain doesn't protect you against that, right? But what the blockchain does and what you want is you want to grow, it allows for a community of trust to grow. Because the more people that participate that in that, and the more people that feel that they have a stake in the honest transaction, the idea is that it pushes out sort of the bad actors. You'll never get rid of the bad actors.
Yeah.
But just because you stake something on the blockchain, you know what? That's like, you know, that's like getting dressed up in a tuxedo in the middle of the desert. You know, you're ready, but nobody else is.
Yeah.
So,
well, here's an example, right? Non-fungible token. Right now, who knows if it's going to change in a year or two, but right now the Bored Ape NFTs are selling for $250,000. And people might be like, what in the heck is that? And you're like, I'm paying $250K for a picture that I can look at for free. And then here's the analogy that I asked my friend who knows a lot, Eric. I said to Eric months ago, I said, you know, the insiders are putting the Bored Ape as their profile, you know, to kind of flex, you know, to show, hey. And I said, what if someone just takes that image and puts it as their profile pic? And here's what he said. He said, Carrie, people will know. And I said, that's interesting. I said, why? He said, the insiders know by clicking on it and tracing it to the blockchain.
Yeah.
Just like the people who know about the Louis Vuitton bag. And check it out. As humans,
exactly.
Right? As humans, we care more about other people's acceptance of us.
Opinion.
And that is a core issue, much more than, hey, look at my bag, look at my picture. It's, am I accepted into the tribe?
Right.
Talk to us about that. What do you think?
Well, that's there's no doubt about that. And, you know, so the idea, you know, early on, so even pre-blockchain, you know, there were, you know, in sort of in Minecraft and then Second Life, right? So there was, you know, Second Life, you probably recall that. And there's, you know, Linden Labs developed it. And there was something that was called Linden Bucks in there. And you could actually take real dollars, convert them to Linden Bucks, and people would be able to buy clothes for their avatar in Second Life. So there, you know, so the idea was that people wanted to be able to present that type of a persona. And there were these games where you could buy some fancy sword, you know, for like some of these fantasy science fiction games.
Sure.
You know, I'm not a big gamer, you know, I'm just not, but I totally get the attraction to it for sure.
Yeah.
It's just never been something that really.
For somebody who doesn't get this, and again, I'll be honest, I didn't get it in the beginning, but when people really start unpacking this, if the statistics are true and we're on this device for more than half of our day, how you appear on this device matters.
Right.
It's right. Like, so it's like the blue check mark. Ooh, look at that person's verified. So I think that my kids who are teenagers, you have some young kids too, but they were born online. You know what I'm saying?
And they get it. They
get it faster than some of us.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And the ability to, so if you think about this, in generations past, you could tell if a person had bought, you know, they might have bought a nice suit that they were wearing to the office. And there was an element, there was sort of a hierarchy that was established by that, or priority. Oh, this person bought a bespoke suit, or this lady bought a bespoke dress or something like that. Well, today, that type of investment is probably going to show up in the digital world one way or the other, right?
Wow.
And, you know, and there's a transition, right? Because there's certain products, technology products, that have a certain amount of status with them because they're a little more expensive, you know? And so, you know, I mean, I'll go ahead and say, let's take something like an Apple product, right? You know, an Apple product early on, there was an element of prestige in, you know, of owning an Apple laptop. I remember, you know, the vast majority of people would have bought a different laptop, but there was just sort of this element of, I use an Apple, you know, and, you know, and so that's now going to move into other things. And you know, I am no branding expert, but I know what the branding experience does to me.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to be said about that. And the blockchain is going to enable that immensely. And so for people like you that are in the publishing and the intellectual property business, there's going to be, it is going to really, really enable that. And as the community of people that respect the blockchain and look to the blockchain for trustless authority, that's where the real power comes from, right? So Metcalfe's law is really going to kick in, you know, and there's, you know, Reed's law of the law of groups, which of course is, I mean, you can't even do the math on that. So
tell us a little bit about those two laws for people who don't know.
Sure. So Metcalfe's law is the law of the network, right? And that basically says that the value of the network is worth the square of the participants, right? So if there are two participants in a network, it has a value of 4. But the second you add a third, it becomes 3 squared. So now it's value of 9 because there's all these new connections that you can create. And then, you know, network of 4 is valued 16. So it grows exponentially. Well, there's something that's called Reed's Law. And most people are familiar with Metcalfe's Law. Not a lot of people are familiar with Reed's Law. And it's the law of groups. And the math is that even within a relatively small population, the number of unique groups that you can form is mind-boggling, right? Like, for example, the number of groups that you can form, that Facebook can form, the number of different unique group permutations of a group that Facebook could form is more than the number of atoms in the entire universe by like a gazillion zeros.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, pretty unbelievable. Pretty unbelievable.
And so, you're saying blockchain. And it has to do,
and so what, yeah. You know, but, you know, so the thing is, you know, as you grow these groups in there and there's all these different groups on the blockchain, think about how quickly collaboration can become transformational, right? One of the things that I told Dan this and the other, I don't know if you were on the call, but I said, look, the difference between, in my opinion, the difference between an event that's transaction or an event that's transactional and an event that's transformational is a transactionally beneficial event is one that benefits the buyer and the seller. A transformational event is one that benefits the buyer and the seller, as well as everybody else around that doesn't get to sign the check either on the front or the back, right? And so that, because that means that now all of a sudden there was a buyer and seller, but now you had everybody in the stands who actually are stakeholders in the outcome, cheering for the outcome.
Wow.
And that is such an incredible, if you think about that, right? So imagine that if there's a merger of some sort, right? If the merger benefits the seller and the buyer, but it screws everybody else, everybody's pulling against it. But if it benefits everybody else, it's so much more powerful. And that makes it transformational instead of transactional. That's sort of my definition of it. But the blockchain is also going to enable that. And people are going to say, well, how is that going to be possible? Well, because there are going to be parts that are now much more open book. There's going to be parts in which voting is going to really, really change.
Yes.
I had a conversation with a fellow strategic coach attendee who is running for national office.
Wow.
And I said, you know, voting, everybody's talking about voting and how our technology and sort of our mindset around it is, you know, 100 years old, if not more. And it's just been sort of, you know, and that's sort of the bolt-on technology to the old way of looking at things. But imagine, I'm just going to throw this out there. Imagine a voting system in which it's on the blockchain. You get to vote as many times, 6 weeks out, everybody gets a paper ballot. Everybody gets a paper ballot. It's the lowest priority ballot, but everybody gets a paper ballot. On top of that, you can go in and vote. You can vote on your phone. And there's all these different ways you can vote. And oh, by the way, you can vote as many times as you want. The only one that counts is the last one. So guess what? You want to get your vote in 6 weeks ahead of time? That's fine. Go ahead. Get your vote in. That's fine. That's it. You change your mind a week out, go vote. Boom. It nullifies the old one. And oh, by the way, it automatically nullifies the old one. Well, how do we keep track of that? Well, there's something called group signatures in which you can guarantee, you can ring signatures, you can guarantee that the vote is valid while maintaining complete privacy and anonymity of the voter. And so the idea being that it eliminates all excuses, because you say, we're going to send a ballot out to every single person once. And oh, by the way, they're welcome to ask for as many ballots as they want. The only one that counts is the last one. So there's no fraudulent ballots. There's no ballot stuffing. All that stuff goes away. There will never be more ballots than there are registered voters.
It's crazy,
right?
Man.
And oh, by the way, because you accept paper ballots, because you accept mobile ballots, because you accept in-person voting, all of that. So an in-person vote takes priority over everything. So you'd say, okay, if you voted in person, we're no longer, you know, mobile voting and paper ballots after that. Yeah, they're just discarded because we're going to assume that that was the one that you actually went in and did. You can go back and vote again if you want to. You know, like just say that they had the voting booths open for a week. You can go in on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and the one on Thursday counts. And then anything that comes in from the paper ballots afterwards, yeah, they don't count.
Changes everything.
All that, it changes everything.
Changes everything. Even me going and buying a banana at a grocery store, there's right. a contract. There's assumed yeah. contract. Every relationship, every human interaction
is a contract.
Oh my gosh.
Protocol is contract. You know, common courtesies are contract. You know, the way that we interact with people and greet people is contract. There's a level of expectation of behavior. How we greet each other is a contract. It's an unstated social contract of how we operate. It's what allows us to operate at a higher level of performance, of existence. If we had to negotiate explicitly every single thing that we tell people, how we say hello, everything else, you don't get anywhere.
Even the fact that you stop talking, I start talking, you stop talking, that's a social contract.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
The way we interact with each other, I know.
There's
so many ways.
Listen,
man, we blew through this hour, didn't we?
We did. Is there anywhere you want me to send people? I know you are one of the best thinkers on blockchain that I know. Is there anywhere you want me to send people?
So, you know, I have my thing that I'm doing for the blockchain right now, sort of an internal project, and it's taking up a lot of my time.
Yeah.
And I'm not looking to sell that. Actually, here's what I want to do. So they're welcome to send an email to pete@datasages.com. Say, hey, I heard this from Carrie. Can we talk about it? I will talk to anybody about the blockchain, because the greater the adoption, the more it strengthens what I want to do long term, right? So for me, I'm not in the business of selling blockchain capability. I'm building it inside. But what I hope is that there's a broader adoption, because then that allows a conversation for me to move forward with less friction. So if,
good,
you know,
man.
Anything I can do, that's the way I look at it.
That is so good. Well, you have an amazing heart. It was awesome to be on that panel with you. And I learned a ton today from you.
Thank you, Carrie. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, man. It was awesome.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Blockchain Life. We hope today's conversation ignited your soul and inspired your mind. Post your comments in a podcast review on iTunes or your platform of choice. We read every single review because your thoughts matter to us. Please share this episode with a friend. We look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.